This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Manji for Education Matters, WGTD Gateway 91.1 HD. On behalf of our radio engineer Troy McDonald, Dave Cole, Dave McGrath, Greg Berg, and all the fine people at Gateway, thank you for supporting WGTD Radio, and thank you for listening in to us this morning. Today, we are featuring another program about people in Kenosha and Racine being kind, practicing peace, and making southeastern Wisconsin a better place to live, work, and study for everyone. People who are making kindness their superpower. This morning, we are delighted to have with us Wilson Shirk and Kathy Norris of St. Mary's Catholic Church right here in Kenosha, part of a group that will be making its 14th annual mission trip to the Dominican Republic, to the sister parish of La Sagrada Familia, the Holy Family Parish, in the town of Sabana Yegua, the Azua province, the southern region of the Dominican Republic, maybe an hour and a half from the Haitian border. Wilson and Kathy are part of a group that supports local eye doctors, Dr. Peter Emer, Dr. Steve Solana, Dr. Jeff Thomas, Dr. Pat from Illinois, and they serve some 800 to 900 people in a week or about that time with eye exams, eye care, supplying glasses, doing cataract surgeries, removing scar tissue, and much, much more. It's amazing that Wilson and Kathy have been part of this group, and this is going to be the 14th annual trip. So it's an amazing thing that St. Mary's and Wilson and Kathy that you are doing. So, Wilson, we'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about the trip? You are the organizer and the leader. And this is your 14th trip, so.
Yes, this is the 14th trip to the Dominican Republic. Generally speaking, it got started a number of years ago when 10 or 12 of us from St. Mary's decided to investigate what life is like in the third world. And so we left with a priest friend of ours, Father Orio Regalis, and we traveled to La Sagrada Familia, Holy Family Parish in the Dominican Republic. We found that the people were very accepting and very welcoming, and so we began these annual trips. And as you said, Joe, this will be the 14th trip next January.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe what procedures, what exactly do you do when you're there?
We really have three separate focuses. First of all, there is a clinic in which we have eye doctors examining patients in the area, and generally that lasts for 4 days, 4.5 days, maybe even 5 days. And we gather folks from the 22 different villages, and we run them through this clinic, and the clinic has some pre-testing services before they see the doctor. That allows the doctor to have some data to begin his evaluations. And once they finish with the doctor, they move on to a medical unit and then to finally just an area that fits glasses for the patients. In addition to that clinic, we also have a surgeon, Dr. Steve Solana, who works with a local doctor in the area, and they do eye surgeries in a hospital located in the city of Azua, which is about a half an hour drive from Sabana Yegua. And they do over 100 surgeries during that same week. Our third focus is to build a house for a family desperately in need of housing. And so over the years, we've built at least one house every year. A couple of years, we built two houses. We're not there to see the finished product. We're there to see the beginnings of the house. But each year, one of the priests will send us pictures of the home that's been completed after we have left.
I think it's just amazing what you're doing. Kathy, you're a retired nurse, registered nurse of 35 years at formerly St. Catherine's and working in dialysis. So what is your role? How do you assist the group?
My role in all the years I've gone has been the eye drop station. And another nurse and I have manned that, teaching patients how to use eye drops. They all get a very limited supply of eye drops to take home. But basically, it's been the eye drop station.
Okay. That's important. Yeah. That's very
And the
important.
Hug station.
Oh, you give lots of hugs, huh? So why do the people in the area have issues with their eyes? Is it the sunlight, the heat? What is it?
All of that, right. The sun, the dryness, the wind, the heat, lots of irritated eyes, lots of eye allergies. We haven't seen a lot of eye infections, miraculously, but mainly irritated eyes. And then the intense sun causes cataracts, so there are a lot of cataracts, a lot of pterygium, the scarring on the eye that Dr. Solano removes from the intense heat and the wind.
Mm-hmm. So you also distribute 800, 900 sets of glasses, and then you hats and sunglasses?
Everybody gets sunglasses. Everybody gets a cap.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to educate them on the importance of protecting their eyes, always wearing sunglasses.
Sure. So a big part of the trip is the connection with La Sagrada Familia, that parish. How big is the parish, Wilson?
The parish actually covers 160 square miles, located in the southwestern corner of the Dominican Republic. There are 22 villages within that area, and Sabaniego happens to be one of the largest villages, and so that's where the mission is located, and that's where the clinic takes place. And as I had mentioned before, the surgeries are done nearby in the city of Azua, which is about a half an hour drive away.
Okay, so we're not talking resort areas or major league or minor league baseball fields. We're talking, describe the terrain. What is it like out there?
Well, first of all, I guess you could say that the southwestern corner of the Dominican Republic is part of the lower area of a mountain range. And so, first of all, the ground is not level. Second of all, it is full of rocks and clay. And yet 98-99% of the people make their living in agriculture. So you can see the struggle that they all have in trying to make enough money growing things so that they're able to provide food and housing for their families. It is a very warm, beautiful place, close to the water, at beautiful beaches. But for agriculture, it just is not the greatest place based on the fact that the torrential rains have tended to wash away the good topsoil, leaving the rocky clay soil that's left. And so there's been some effort to try and find some kinds of vegetables and fruits that will grow well in that soil. And they've been somewhat successful, but basically it is a very difficult area to try and maintain your standard of living because of the difficulty with the soil.
You've made some wonderful connections with the people of the Dominican Republic. It is a sister parish. So can you tell us, Kathy, who do you stay with when you travel there with a family? Tell us about who you've met and the people you've become friends with.
I've had the great honor and privilege, actually, of staying with the family of Wanda and Blas, and who speak very little English. The husband speaks some words of English. Wanda really does not speak any English. When I first met them, they had one son, lived in a very small house, no electricity, no running water. She swept her yard with a broom made out of sticks that were lashed together, and the bed I slept on was maybe chicken wire nailed to a little board with a bunch of rags as a, as a mattress. So, I mean, it was far from resort accommodations. But I immediately fell in love with them, and with the use of an English-Spanish dictionary, managed to somehow communicate with them for those initial days.
Sure.
So on succeeding trips, I've always stayed with the same family. The third trip there, Wanda was pregnant, and through an interpreter, she asked me if I would be the godmother of the baby that was going to be born during the winter, or during the spring, actually, that I was gone. So I certainly agreed, and they waited for us to come back the following January, and Deacon Wilson performed a beautiful bilingual service, and little Kayler was baptized down there, and I was the godmother. So, and again, I've never really had a conversation with these people like I'm having with you because of the language barrier.
Sure.
But nods, smiles, hugs, kisses, the language of the heart certainly took over where the language of the brain didn't, because neither of us could really speak to each other. But I've stayed with them all nine times that I've gone, and they are my Dominican family. So
that's just awesome.
Yeah,
Wilson, how about you? Who do you stay with, and some of the friendships you've met?
My first two or three years, I had a host family as well, and I too was very frustrated because my Spanish is very, very poor, and their English also is not very, very sufficient. And so I can remember vividly sitting out on their porch one night looking up at the beautiful stars in the sky. And of course, the constellations are different than they are here. I couldn't think of the word for star. I couldn't think of the word for light. And so I was extremely frustrated trying to communicate the beauty of their night sky. The last few years, I've stayed at the rectory with one of the priests because we communicate every day and we kind of coordinate the activities from one day to the next. Mm-hmm. But I thoroughly enjoyed my first two or three years there. And again, it was no running water and an outdoor latrine. So it was certainly much different than what I'm used to in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
I know, because my wife, Pat, has gone, I think, 12 times and keeps going back and is going to go again this coming year. But you work awfully long hours each day. We're talking 10 to 12 hours, am I correct? How do you manage that? You have to have stamina to go on a trip like this and do what you guys do.
I always say it's wonderfully exhausting, the whole trip. it is truly, it is difficult because you don't sleep well at night. You're not really in an air-conditioned, nice room. It's very noisy there with animals and chickens and roosters and dogs barking all night. So, I'm physically speaking for myself, you're just tired the whole time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the adrenaline kicks in, the excitement of the clinic kicks in,
sure,
and the days go. But when you do get home after that 10 days stint, I mean, you're really pretty tired. So, but it's a small price to pay for all that you gain from going.
Sure, your group has developed a wonderful camaraderie over the years. It's become the St. Mary's Mission family, and what's also amazing is the number of young people that join your group and are part of it. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about that, the college students or high school students or the young people? What do you see through their eyes?
Every year we have college students that go. In fact, we choose to go in January not only because it's colder in Wisconsin and it's beautifully warm there, but this is the time of the year when college students are home on vacation. And so they use some of their Christmas vacation to go with us and return before the next semester begins. Mm-hmm. It's also an advantage to the doctors because doctors tell us that January is probably one of the slowest months in their year as far as patients coming for help. And so it's to their advantage to go in January as well as giving us the opportunity to invite students, college students and high school students. We had a girl from one of the local high schools in Kenosha who did a lot of videotaping while she was there, and she used it for her senior project when she got back in May. So it's marvelous to see how the experience that they have in the Dominican Republic certainly enhance their educational opportunities as they go back to their colleges and high schools and share their experiences.
How do you do eye exams without knowing being fluent in Spanish? How do you maneuver that? Or do you have enough Spanish-speaking students or members of your group that help you navigate every day?
Well, we've had wonderful interpreters like Mrs. Pat Manji, who went along all these years. And we've been fortunate to have maybe at least two or three speakers, as well as some of the younger fellows that are at the mission who are native speakers, and they speak fairly good English.
Sure.
And we've all come prepared with cheat sheets on different phrases that are pertinent to the station that you're working at. So I got to learn how to say put one drop in your right eye three times a day pretty well after a while.
Okay. All right.
Except gato is drop and gato is cat. I didn't want to say put one cat in your eye three times a day. So.
Well, that leads to the next question. When you intersperse cultures, there's got to be humor. There's got to be, just because everybody's so different. So can you share a humorous story with your host family or something that happened while you were there that...
The cat and the drop was one.
Okay, well that takes care of it. If you think of another one,
my host dad, Blas, who spoke some English, I would try to say things and I can't think off the top of my head. But they called me Catalina, so Catalina, you Spanish very bad. He says. in general, it was a struggle.
Yeah. How about you, Wilson?
Well, my house mom, I called her my house mom. She's a very sweet lady, and she diligently was learning English every year. And so every year she'd give me a big hug and a kiss, and she'd say, "Well, I want to know how much better your Spanish is." And so we would talk a little bit, and every year she would say to me, "You know," she said, "my English gets better every year, but your Spanish doesn't improve at all." And so we would chuckle about the fact that her educational efforts far outpaced mine.
I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Iran, and if the mail went through, my mother would send me the Sunday funny papers. She'd cut them out of the Milwaukee Journal and into sections and put them in an envelope, and hopefully it got through to the mail. But if I got them, they were colorful, first of all, and they were funny. So I thumbtacked them to the wall in my compound, which was really straw and clay and dirt. I mean, these thumbtacks would work. So we were obliged to have a cook because it gave somebody a job. Mm-hmm. And I'm teaching all day and whatever. So I came home a couple of times, and here is Cardi J on the floor just laughing so hard she's sobbing. So humor can be universal. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were simple cartoons, so that's one of my funny stories. So traveling, because I drop Pat off and sometimes you, Kathy, and so for everybody out there, this is usually the second week in January when it's bone-chilling cold in Kenosha. And it's 3:00 in the morning, and we're at St. Mary's in the parking lot trying to get the luggage on the bus, and then you guys have to travel to O'Hare, and then you have to fly to either Miami or Atlanta, and then you end up in Santo Domingo. I know it's a struggle. It's an awfully long journey. So from start to finish, how long does it take, Wilson, from St. Mary's to where you're going?
Depending upon when the flight leaves O'Hare, it would take us a better part of the whole day. If we're really fortunate and the flight is leaving early from O'Hare, we don't get into Santo Domingo until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock their time in the afternoon. We've had some problems traveling, and we've arrived in Santo Domingo as late as 9 or 10 o'clock at night. But generally speaking, you're up and at 'em at 3 in the morning, and you're not into Santo Domingo until at least 3 o'clock in the afternoon once you clear customs.
So then how do you get from Santo Domingo to where you're going, Savannah, Yegua?
Generally speaking, the priest that is the pastor at the La Sagrada Familia Parish meets us at the airport, and he has trucks. We put the suitcases in one truck, and the human beings are in a bus, and off we go. It's about 2.5-3 hour drive from the airport to the mission itself.
In recent years, or maybe for a long time, Dr. Steve Solana kind of organizes a truckload of goods. And what kinds of things accompany you guys? Mm-hmm. He's always shipping things down there, it seems. Do they ever get to the actual people?
Well, actually, now that you've asked, Joe, there are two large skids of materials right now awaiting a semi from Chicago to send them down. And if we get them gone from the Kenosha area by the end of this week, we were promised that they would arrive at the port in Santo Domingo before Christmas. In the past, we sent a whole container, which is a matter of over 20 skids of material. And it's everything from, I had a large collection of math books, K through 8, that somebody gave me in Spanish. And so that's a huge contribution. Mm-hmm. We send all kinds of medical equipment, varieties of things that Dr. Solana has gathered over time. The basement of his office is just full of things, and we gather them up and put them in that container as well. The container and the collection of items this time has a bit of a problem because the customs procedures in the Dominican Republic are not quite the same as they are here. And so it appears that you have to know somebody in order to move items from the port to the mission. That's always a challenge.
Let's talk about customs for a little bit. Peter Eamer is always talking about his adventures with customs that he seems to be singled out. I think, Peter, I hope you're listening in, but I think you would agree. So what are some of the obstacles or things that you've had to deal with going through customs?
Well, I can tell you this. We used to bring back coffee, and the coffee they're packaged in one-pound containers, and there are 21-pound containers in a large bag. And we would put those in our suitcase, and when the suitcase went through the X-ray machine, inevitably the individuals that were there would pull that suitcase off, and they would inspect it to make sure that it was indeed coffee that are in those one-pound bags.
So we're at the halfway point, and this is WGTD 91.1 HD Education Matters, and we're honored to have Wilson Shirk and Kathy Norris of St. Mary's Catholic Church right here on 39th Avenue in Kenosha. And this is going to be their 14th mission trip to the Dominican Republic. La Sagrada Familia, Sabana Yegua. Where together with Dr. Solana, Dr. Peter Eamer, Dr. Jeff Thomas, and local eye doctors, they see 800 to 900 people within a week's time with eye exams, fitting glasses for people, cataract surgeries. You mentioned that word, Kathy.
Pterygium.
What is pterygium?
It's like a scarring on the surface of the eye, mm-hmm. like kind of like an orange peel type scarring
okay.
that eventually would cause blindness if not removed.
Okay. So the friendships that you've made, the people, you're staying with virtually the same people year after year. Can you tell us a little bit about the families that you're with? Some of the families that you've been with or connected with or stayed with for over a period of time?
I've just stayed with the same family 9 times.
This okay.
Wanda and Blas. Now they have 2 little boys. Wonderful, giving, caring, affectionate, mm-hmm. gracious people.
Sure.
And I mean, I'd like to tell one little story about
them.
Yeah, please.
Because stories are great.
The first couple years, they really had nothing. She had, like I said, no electricity or running water, maybe a fork that had 2 little tines in it and mm-hmm. half of a knife and a couple little tin coffee cups. And we would eat breakfast with our family. So we'd get a piece of bread and a cup of very good Dominican coffee in a little battered up cup. And so maybe the second or third year time I was there, she had little china cups, a little blue and white cup, and I made a big fuss about, oh, Wanda, you know, muy bonita, mm-hmm. this little cup, because it was really very lovely, the nicest thing she had in her house. So the day we're leaving to go back home, Blas has a little box all wrapped up, and he hands it to me, and he says, this is lunch for your travels, like lunch to go back.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank you. Oh, no, mm-hmm. yes, you take it. So we stop at a resort on the way home for a day or two to take a hot shower and sleep in a real bed. And so we get to the hotel, and I thought, well, if there's lunch in here, I better open this up and so I don't get bugs. Or open up the box, and that little coffee cup and saucer was in the box.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I'm getting goosebumps as I'm saying. She gave me the nicest thing she had in her house.
Sure.
And it's on my kitchen counter, has been there for years, and every yeah. time I see it, I think of them and pray that God's watching over that family. So that's just an example of how much you get out of going to that on that trip.
Yeah.
Even if it's hard and you don't sleep and you're hot and you're wishing for a shower, just seeing the gratitude and the graciousness of these people is something you just can't even put words to. It's mm-hmm. it's wonderful.
Wilson, let's say I'm a college student and I've heard of what St. Mary's does. What would you say to me to join the group? And how can people sign up if they want to go the following year? Probably this year is a little late, but how do you sign up? Do you need to know Spanish? What are the prerequisites? What do you do?
Generally speaking, when students are interested in going, we sit down and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. They have specific questions concerning accommodations, concerning what kinds of knowledge do they need to go. And generally, we simply tell them, if you know some Spanish, that's fine. But the main thing that you need is an open mind to welcome people from a different culture and from mm-hmm. to speak a different language and have the desire to be a servant and to help those who desperately need some help from us. We also stress the fact that we go in solidarity, which simply means that we are not there just bringing all the good things and they offer us nothing back.
Mm-hmm.
We are guided and asked to be very careful so that we know that as we go as representatives from a first world country and we are talking to people and interacting with people in a third world country, they have lessons to teach us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to remain open-minded so that we are not only willing to teach others some of the things that we know, but we are willing to listen and to learn from them as well.
Do you have a heartwarming story like Kathy just shared with us?
I have a couple of stories. These are focused on the interaction in the clinic itself. Mm-hmm. The clinic is a large room just adjacent to the church. It's used for gatherings for folks who are coming for dinner, for food, or for some kinds of lessons. It is warm in there. Most days it's over 85 degrees in that room, and there's not much of a breeze that's moving. So you're working in that room 10, 12 or more hours a day. I can vividly remember the lady. She came into the clinic, and she was somewhat apprehensive. An older lady, not too certain about what she should do. And so she was welcomed in. She cycled through the preliminary tests, mm-hmm. and then she waited for the doctor to examine her. And then she moved from the doctor to the medication area where she got the eye drops, and then she came to the area where a pair of glasses were offered to her. Now, it's a long table. She sat on one side, and those of us who were working to fit glasses were working on the other side. We looked at the card. We found two or three pair of glasses that met her qualifications. And so we handed her a pair of glasses, and she just sat there on the chair just looking at them. And she finally reached out to pick the glasses up, and she raised them a few inches off the table, and then she set them back down again. And this happened two or three times until she finally had the courage to lift those glasses all the way up and place them on her head. Mm-hmm. And then there was a quiet couple of seconds, and she looked around, she looked behind her, she looked left and to the right, and looked up at the ceiling. She jumped up from her chair, knocked the chair over, raised her hands above her head as a football referee would do,
sure.
and she said, "It is finished. Finally, darkness is gone, and I can see."
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
It is.
That's something that would stay with you forever.
Mm, right.
Wow. So that's kind of how people are so happy and thankful that St. Mary's and you guys are there.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Well, you saw that, maybe not to that degree, but mm-hmm. smiles on everyone's face that are getting their first pair of glasses.
Right.
Senior citizens that can finally have a pair of cheaters to read and see something, as mm-hmm. we all experience.
Sure.
Children that have looked around and grinning from ear to ear as they're looking at their mom or their grandma who brought them to the clinic. It really is indescribable, the joy that we've witnessed with people being able to see.
Your first time to the Dominican, what was the biggest surprise? What caught you off guard, or I don't want to say shock, but what was the biggest, "I never knew this would be like this," or there's always a surprise. Being a Peace Corps volunteer in Iran, the 24-hour plane ride was enough to do you in from O'Hare to New York to Turkey to Tehran. But the fact that there was no color, there were no greens, there were no blues, it was just sandy desert, mountainous, rocky, there was no color, and all the five senses were different. Mm. The sights were different, the smells were different, the sounds were different, the touch. Your five senses are all discombobulated. What are some of the similarities that you can adjust to? Oh, we're the same. And what are some of the differences? What would you think?
I guess what impressed me, or what surprised me, I guess, that on my first trip was the abject poverty of the people that are there. The fact that they seem relatively happy and are able to live day to day, living in an environment that is so much less than what we have here in the States. Many of the homes have no electricity. Many of the homes have no running water. Many of the homes have an outside latrine. And there are homes in which one latrine is shared by a number of families. The little bit that they eat. But I guess the other thing that surprised me, in that environment, in that poverty, they are so willing to share whatever it is that they have. Whenever you would visit their home, they would bring out all the chairs that they had. We would sit outside and we would talk. They would always offer you something to eat. And as the priest would tell us many times, what we got to eat as a guest was what they were probably planning to have for their own dinner that day. And so we were always treated with great respect. And we were always, we were the guests of honor. And it was always obvious to us. They were so very glad and so very grateful. It is overabundance from the any kinds of gratitude that we've experienced among families and friends. And so that, to me, was the greatest surprise in visiting the DR.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Mm-hmm. Sabaniegua, I always say, is like the Allendale of the area because the houses were decent, or at least right around the mission. But every block or two that you went away from that, as the radius increased, the houses got poorer and poorer, where they were oil drums hammered together somehow, or sticks lashed together, and outdoor kitchens, and like Wilson said, maybe one latrine for a whole area of houses. So that, too, was stunning to me to see that in 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever years I was there, that people still live like that happily. I mean, it changed my whole attitude as far as gratitude and thankfulness and stewardship from seeing how people live there. And I've always said to people, it's my mantra, I dare you to go once, just once on this trip. You're going to always have to go back because you want to keep recapturing that sense of graciousness and true gratitude that you witness there. And it's a wonderful thing to see and be a part of.
I think one thing that's universal is the strength of families. How wherever you are on this earth, families, strong families make for happy people and strong people, but it's the family. That's right. Universal, right. It seems. So, Wilson,
and if I could just interrupt, that's true with this eye clinic, too. I have thought the moms that bring their children, or the adult children that bring their 90-year-old mother to the clinic, they are as worried about that loved one in this very primitive setting as we are taking our child to maybe the top-notch specialist in downtown Chicago. I mean, it's people are people. Mothers love their children, and husbands love their wives. And it's that universality is it's just so poignant that it's just such a wonderful lesson to see and try to remind yourself that, yes, we all are the same. We all are together. We all should be kind, and we all should be peaceful.
Absolutely. There's a reason why it's probably named Holy Family Parish, right? How many miles are we talking about of the parish?
It's 160 square miles.
Oh, my God.
And the 22 villages, and some of the villages are not terribly far distance-wise, but because of the infrastructure, it takes a long time to get from one village to the other because of the poor roads. I do have a story that I'd like to share.
Yeah,
like to
please.
Share
we've
well.
Got time. We've got we've got 8 minutes left.
Okay. Well, we happened to have been at our parish when the earthquake struck Port-au-Prince.
Oh yeah.
A few years ago, you may remember that it was in January.
Yes.
Immediately, many of the adult males from the Sabaniegua area left whatever jobs they had, and they went quickly into Port-au-Prince and into Haiti to try and help out as best they could. But to give you some idea of the generosity, well, first of all, it's a known fact that the relationship between Haitians and Dominicans has never been really positive.
Okay.
And so there have been efforts on the part of both countries to interact with the two cultures and to try and to smooth that over so that there's more acceptance of each of them in the other country. Mm-hmm. The San Francisco area is an area not far from the parish church. It is probably the poorest area in the city of Sabaniegua. At Mass the Sunday after the earthquake, the children of the San Francisco neighborhood gathered pennies and nickels and dimes, mm-hmm. and as part of the church service, they brought up this very well-decorated box, and in that box they had managed to gather $50 that they wanted the parish mission group to send to Port-au-Prince to help out the Haitian folks who were struggling. $50 to us does not seem like an awful lot, but $50 to the people in the San Francisco neighborhood area is a great sacrifice on their part. So I was extremely impressed with the willingness of people who historically have not gotten along well together, immediately gave more than you could expect, and that money was sent to Port-au-Prince to help out their neighbors who were struggling.
It's amazing. We've got a few minutes left. Wilson, you're a lifelong principal and educator and teacher at Kenosha Unified. What's the education system like in the Dominican? Do the kids have hope? Is there a future for them?
The education system in the DR is attached to the political system in the DR, and that's unfortunate because, generally speaking, there are four or five different political parties, and teachers pretty much are asked to join one of these parties. And so if they are a member of the party that wins the election, then they retain their job. But unfortunately, if they are a member of the party that does not win the election, they are out of a job. And so there isn't a consistency that would be very vital. I had the opportunity to visit some of the schools. First of all, they're not air-conditioned, and second of all, it's warm and difficult. Thirdly, the classrooms that I saw would never exist, even in the poorest of districts in the United States. Desks that weren't used were piled up in the corner. The teacher had very little materials to work with. Some of the children were sharing books rather than having their own. They would even share the paper that they were writing on. So it was extremely difficult to imagine any kind of successful stories because of the poor educational system. Mm-hmm. I can't speak about any improvements that have been recently made because I'm not sure of that. But the comment that the priest often made was, every time I visit a school, these kids are at recess, and there has to be more to education than recess. Mm-hmm. And he was joking, of course, but obviously when the rooms are very warm and it's very difficult to retain the attention of kids over a long period of time, there are frequent breaks and children are outside a lot. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are some villages where the educational opportunities end at grade 4 or grade 5 because they're too far from any other educational building anywhere close by. And mm-hmm. so there are numbers of them that only go to the 4th grade or to the 5th grade, and then that's the extent of their educational opportunities.
So we're finishing up with Wilson Shirk and Kathy Norris of St. Mary's Amazing Mission Group. You're on your way to your 14th trip to the Dominican Republic. When do you leave, Wilson?
One group leaves on Saturday, the 5th of January, and the second group leaves on Monday, the 7th of January. So we stagger it a bit so that not all of us are going at the same time. As of today, there are 24 people going on Mission 14.
Thank you both for sharing this amazing experience with us and for bringing kindness and thankfulness to our community and to the people of the Dominican Republic. So thanks for listening, everyone. This is WGTD.